on the people. Dancing on the people like I.
Everybody in the booth can tell my.
SMQB, this is episode 194. Getting closer to 200. We're almost there, fellas.
Yeah.
Can't wait for the next tattoo.
Who is bringing someone to a bar this week?
Is there a chance to have a drink?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a question? I'll tell you who I'm bringing.
Yeah,
to the
let's
bar.
Drink. Come on.
I'm drinking heavily with Travis Hunter, Heisman Trophy winner from the Buffs. And I just want to take him to the bar and say congratulations on coming from where you started in Florida to a small college, to then to Colorado, and now Heisman Trophy. I mean, I just have to say to him, that's crazy. That's crazy. Actually crazy. You know what I mean? That's crazy, bro. I loved his speech. His speech was, if you had to drink every time he said crazy, you'd still be shit-faced after listening to that thing. It was awesome. And congratulations to Travis Hunter. Crazy.
Pope, what about you?
No, it's not going to surprise you guys, but one, Bill Belichick going to, they call him now Chapel Bill, going to UNC, shocked the world. It's been very interesting listening to the rationale that Team Belichick has been putting out as to why he's doing it. I'd just love to have some drinks with him and pick his brain on what the hell he was thinking and what his ideas and plans are. Cause it sounds like he's trying to make Carolina into a mini NFL starter kit.
I think we're going to talk a little bit about that a little later, right?
He's trying to get his girlfriend a graduate degree.
Oh,
that's what this boils down to.
Who are you bringing to the bar?
I am going to bring one Chris Collinsworth to the bar.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm hoping to get him to drink enough to shut the F up. I just want to say to him.
Usually has the opposite effect, don't you think?
I want to tell him, listen, man, I'm going to buy you a drink and it's for free and everything, but you are the most annoying announcer in the history of announcers of any sport. And your ridiculous brown nosing, glazing over all these people, like with all you superlatives, it's played out, man. It's played out. Like, move on. Like, I'm done with you, Collinsworth. I'm so annoyed by that dude.
All right. Jeez. I never understood the angst people have over announcers. You know, like I don't know. I don't get it.
I'm
people
starting to feel that way announcers. About Greeny. I'm so over Greeny right now. Ugh.
Oh, God. Wow. All right. Well, I'm bringing one Sean Hockley to the bar because I had some questions for Mr. Official Hockley. It didn't make a difference unless I don't know what the spread was on the Commanders Saints game yesterday. But did you guys see what they did with the clock? Did you see what they did with the clock?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they literally they stopped the clock for 4 to 5 seconds after the second to last play. The game should have been over before the touchdown. And Hockley's quote after the thing was, he said that the referee in charge stopped, blew the whistle. The play should not, that he should not have done that, period. The clock should not have stopped, period. That was it. That was all he said. So acknowledging that they made a mistake, that it did cost, you know, gave them basically 4 to 5 extra seconds. And when they snapped the ball, there was only 3 seconds left. So the game should have been over before the touchdown. They never should have had that. So I'd like to learn how that fucking happened. That's what I want to know.
The record is this, I just for the
it's
record,
crazy.
Is for the record, is this Bison complaining about the refs? I just want to check.
Well, I thought about that because no, it's not. I just have questions. If I was going to complain, I would have made it a punchable face, but I elected not to do that I more have questions about how that actually happens, that you just stop the clock for 5 seconds and give the home team a few extra seconds there. All right. Pope, you're going to lead us off a little bit. We've got some developments in college football, and I'm not talking about the playoff.
What is going on here? Toby, you know, certainly gets credit for spotting it first, but then, boy, did it become a blowing up story. But we've wondered what the impact would be about the transfer portal and the way that these guys are able just to declare and leave school and have no penalty, along with, of course, the head coaches. So in Marshall, who had a 10-3 year, won the Sun Belt Conference championship 31-3 over Louisiana Lafayette, and was set to play Army in the Independence Bowl on December the 28th. At the time the matchup was set, Army hadn't gotten blown out by Navy, so it was a little bit more attractive. But the head coach for Marshall, Charles Huff, was on a contract year, and he didn't get extended, and there was some question about them hanging up on the contract, and so he preemptively left and went to Southern Miss to be their head coach. And in doing so, he started a Calvary, leaving 29 scholarship players as of today have entered the transfer portal for Marshall. The North Carolina State defensive coordinator took over the job and tried to salvage what he could, but you know, they're going to have to obviously use the transfer portal to rebuild their team, and they can't do it while they're trying to play for a bowl game, and they don't have enough scholarship players to have a safe and healthy bowl team out there. So they informed the Independence Bowl that they were withdrawing because they couldn't field a team. Independence Bowl was left scrambling. They thought they had a great matchup with a 10-3 team versus Army, and they had to go, and they actually found a sub-500 team, Louisiana Tech, that was 5-7. Independence Bowl in Shreveport. Well, it's pretty exciting. But this creates the problem that we've been talking about. I mean, like Alabama, for instance, you know, they lost, 15 or so guys from the transfer portal right after the regular season ended. Even though they're going to play Michigan, they're still going to stay, you know, with it. But because the transfer portal is set up to be done before the bowl games, before the college football playoff, you have a scenario where you have teams that are losing their players, but they're going to continue to play out. Like Preston Stone is going to be the backup quarterback for SMU this weekend, but he's transferring. Travis Etienne for Georgia is the running back, is going to transfer. He's already entered the transfer portal, but yet he's going to be, you know, obviously starring when they play in the second round.
It's like Lewis Hamilton finishing the season for Mercedes. Whenever
there you go.
He's got a contract with Ferrari next year.
There you go.
I'm just trying to figure out what I'm going to do with myself on the night of December the 28th. Now I can't watch Marshall.
No, Independence Bowl. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Marshall is probably just the canary in the coal mine. My guess is that it will not be in a vacuum, and we'll see more of this. The NCAA has a problem on their hands. They got to figure something out. Obviously, the players are not penalized.
I'm sure they'll figure it out, because the NCAA has been such a beacon of working this stuff out in the, you know, over the years now. I mean, that's the worst organization you can have that thinks they're gonna work something out here.
What would stop them from just saying you can't enter the transfer portal until after the bowl games and the playoffs are over?
And that's the most simple solution. I mean, behind Pope, and I know he's going to talk about it today with his ponies, but this is now affecting directly a college football playoff game, potentially. So SMU is going to play at Penn State, and their quarterback, which is behind Pope, is the, you know, I guess superstar quarterback of Penn State, Drew Allar. The backup. So if that guy goes down in that game, Penn State has no backup. Why? Because this guy, Bo Pribula, sorry, Bo, if I'm pronouncing it wrong, Bo Pribula, who is Penn State's backup, was faced with the quote-unquote impossible decision about what does he do. Does he enter the transfer portal now and land with a team where he can probably start next year and be hopefully a star, because Penn State backup is pretty good, or does he just stay and ride the bench for the CFP game? And he said, sorry, Penn State fans, this is for my future and for my career. I'm entering the portal now, and I want my best chance to land with somebody. So we have like the first year of the college football playoff, and the backup quarterback to Penn State is not there. Like, you're already looking at a third or fourth stringer if Allar somehow gets hurt. That is crazy. That's all because of the portal.
Yeah. Well, you can't blame the player, though. They got to do with
that. No, you can't fault the player.
But the rules needed to change.
Well, the reason that they're doing the portal now is because they want the players in place for the beginning of the second semester. But what they're doing I know, and I'm like, really? Academics matter? Yeah. Really?
Nah,
come on, man. Because what they're doing is they're creating this problem for the teams that are going to bowl games and going to the college football playoffs, just like we discussed. I mean, they should at least hold the transfer portal out until after January the 20th, until after we crown a national champion. And if they, oh, the player's going to come into class 3 weeks late, oh, is that really going to be a problem?
Well, you know, the old rule used to be that if you transferred, you had to sit out.
Yep.
Right. So why can't they change the rule to if you're going to transfer, you can't transfer until the fall semester, right? So that you have to stay or you can't participate in any athletic activities until the fall semester. So that, in other words, you're incentivized to stay in school, to play in the games until the spring is over. And then you can enter the transfer portal and go. And you just don't get the benefit of spring practice.
It's a mess.
I mean,
it's a mess. And
head coaches, you know, that was the problem. Head coaches were not penalized, and then players were penalized for a year. And so now they equalized it. And now you're going to do the same thing for head coaches? False semester only?
I mean, it's just so disgusting to me. It's really disgusting. It's really what's happening in college football right now is just vile. It's undoing everything that's good about college sports. It's just, I don't know. I just find it so distasteful. There's no loyalty to your team. There's something like a third of the players are in the portal every year. I mean, I don't know. The whole thing is distasteful to me. It's just not interesting. It's not. It's just yucky. I don't know.
It's a
business now. It's a business.
Well, it's a business for kids who aren't prepared to be in the business world. You have 18 to 21 year old kids, many of whom come from tough upbringings, don't have a ton of money behind them, and the portal brings with it the promise of $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, because that's what most of these kids are getting, is they're being lured with bags of money to go in the portal, some smaller than others. But that this is just plain free agency. And the NCAA isn't doing anything. I'm guessing there's no business guidance. There's no tax guidance. There's no any kind of guidance that the NCAA is doing. Certainly nothing has been publicized that helps provide guides for these kids. We're in the wild, wild west for a couple of years, but it will be fixed. I agree with you, Bison. The NCAA isn't the one to do it, but it's got to be fixed. This is not sustainable to keep having amateur athletics that's just a free agency free-for-all.
Yeah. Well, all right. We could go on for a long time about this, but it's just really unfortunate. And listen, money is the root of all evils, right? And here it is. Here it is. It's ruining what's supposed to be kids playing at a high level, you know, playing sports and not in a business. But here we are. We do have to talk about the college football playoff matchups, though. So, Hope, you want to take it away since.
I can't remember,
is this your team that you went to SMU, or you just root for SMU, or you drove by SMU one time? I can't remember. Which is it? You actually have multiple degrees from SMU.
This is the one that should be his team. Like, this is the one he should be able to stay on, but I want him to disavow everyone else.
That's what I want to do
in the pod. Damn it.
Fuck all you guys. Not going to do
it.
He wants to keep his other ones alive, man.
Yeah. Listen, there's going to be a playoff next year too, House. You don't ever know. You got to keep your options open. All right. Pope, get into it. SMU versus Penn State.
I think I texted this earlier to our larger group. I said, never in my wildest dreams did I ever expect SMU to be competitive in college football again after the death penalty when I was there, let alone compete for a national championship. Obviously, the only reason that's happened is because the playoffs have expanded to 12 teams. NIL now is cool. Back when we did it, was not legal.
When we did it.
Yeah. Not illegal. NIL, that's what we say it down here on the Hilltop. But SMU going to Penn State on Saturday. It's going to be cold AF.
Very cold.
And SMU is not used to playing in cold weather. Penn State is, you know, a traditional Big Ten powerhouse football team that is going to try to run the ball down SMU's throats. SMU is more of a finesse team. Their quarterback, Kevin Jennings, who, you know, will probably be mentioned next year in the early season hype for Heisman. He's had a great year. He's done over 3,000 yards this year, 27 touchdowns. You know, as Kevin Jennings go, so goes the Ponies. One of his worst games this year was against Duke, and they should have lost to Duke. But by the way, that is their best win of the year. So they really haven't had any signature wins. Their running back, Breshard Smith, has had a great year, over 1,500 yards from scrimmage. Scoring offense, SMU is 38.5 points a game. They're number six in the FBS. And then Penn State is 33.6 points a game, number 25. Defense, you flip it. SMU is 20.8 a game, and that's 27th. And Penn State is giving up 16.4 points a game, which is eighth. Penn State's best win was probably Illinois. They lost to Oregon and Ohio State by one touchdown each. SMU lost to BYU and Clemson. SMU lost to BYU and Clemson by 3 points each. Drew Aller, who we kind of mentioned earlier, is a 27 touchdown quarterback. But I really look at, can Penn State control the ball? Can they run the ball, because SMU's defense is suspect on the run, as seen by last week. Clemson kind of gouged them. Obviously, this is going to be the best defense that SMU has seen all year. Abdul Carter, who's defensive end, is a top 10 NFL draft pick, 19 and a half tackles for loss. He's going to be tough to contain. Here, you know, the line is 8.5. I think that's probably fair. I think weather and home, yeah, it's going to be a whiteout. There's going to be over 100,000 crazy Matt Rosenbergs jumping up and down with their white stuff on, yelling and screaming. And, you know, it's going to be a tough, tough environment. I think 8.5 is fair. SMU, number two in terms of turnovers, 21 turnovers this year. UT at number with 22 was slightly more, but turnover is key. If SMU turns the ball over like they did against Clemson in the beginning, they are going to be in trouble. They could get routed if they turn the ball over, because they aren't coming back against Penn State like they did against Clemson.
Oh, one of my kids said something to me about that Penn State. I didn't take a close look at this. Maybe you did in your preview, but that Penn State doesn't really have many signature wins themselves this year, and that their schedule in the Big Ten. So, like, who's their most signature win? I mean, yeah, they're a highly ranked team and they're number four here in the playoff, number six overall in the country. But who's their signature win, if anybody, during the year?
I mean, if you look at the rankings, it was Illinois. Illinois is ranked number 20 in the college football playoffs. And they beat Illinois early in the season by 14. You know, they had to go to overtime to beat USC, a fairly average USC team.
This has to be the game with the most upset potential.
Yeah, I would.
In the first round, no?
Well, first of all, I don't think Tennessee over Ohio State's necessarily an upset.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, they're more evenly matched. Talk about them in a minute. But, yeah, I would agree. I think that SMU is still kind of a scary unknown entity for some of these Big Ten teams. And they like to play fast, too. I mean, they're... You know, Rhett Lashley's going to have those guys up on the line of scrimmage after every every play is over, they're going to be snapping the ball in the first 10, 15 seconds. So, but it is all about confidence. SMU plays well when they have confidence. The reason they came back against Clemson is they finally got some things going their right way. You know, if Jennings can move the ball against Penn State's defense and SMU does not let Penn State control the clock, then I think it's going to be a close game.
The defense, unlike SMU, has seen this year. I really
no
do.
Question, no question.
And
they haven't
I
seen
think,
an Abdul Carter.
Yeah, I think the last few weeks, notwithstanding the comeback against Clemson, I feel like SMU has fallen off a little bit. I didn't, you know, that Duke team who has a decent defense, if that they should have lost that game. So I don't know. I still like Penn State, but I also agree that this is the biggest chance for an upset.
I don't know. They're just Penn State. Just I don't know. I just, for some reason, they make me nervous. I don't know.
Yep.
Dare we say, Bison, that Penn State's just a team?
Just a team. Interesting. They did look better. They looked better against Oregon than I thought they would, actually. So I'll give them that.
Yeah,
all right. Let's go house to the dreaded 5-12. Always an upset in the tournament every year. Oh, wait, that's the wrong tournament. Okay, never mind. Let's talk about Texas Clemson.
I wish this had the kind of excitement of a 12-5 in NCAA basketball, but NCAA football, notwithstanding the fact that these are two blue bloods, I think it pretty much ends there. Clemson has played a little bit better towards the end of the year, but this is the number 16 ranked team in the country versus the number 3 ranked team in the country. Texas was number 1 for a long time. Texas has lost twice this year, both times to back-to-back national champion Georgia. And, you know, this is the quote-unquote number one at-large beyond the first 4 seeds that get byes. Texas is the best one outside of that. You know, Texas is defense all day long. You know, 3rd in yards per game, 1st against passing yards allowed, 2nd points allowed. Texas's average scoring games is 33.64, 12 against. They average just giving up 12 points. When you consider their SEC schedule, that is incredible. 12 points per year, whereas Clemson averages 35 to 23. So you have two high scoring teams, both who score over 30 points, and it's who's going to give on defense. Clemson does have Cade Klubnik, and he's a very, very, very good quarterback, a very good running back, and Phil Mafah, and good wide receiver. But I just think Clemson's signature wins are versus Pitt, at Pitt, 24-20, and of course the ACC championship against SMU. If you take that away, you know, they lost to South Carolina, they lost to Louisville, they got blown out by Georgia in the beginning of the season. Then you look at Texas's schedule, and if you take away the two Georgia losses, they have wins over Michigan, Oklahoma, Vandy, Florida, Arkansas, Kentucky, and A&M. Those are 7 teams that are pretty damn good, that none of them, except for the Vandy game, were very close at all. And Texas has just been dominant. This is the this is going to be the Quinn Ewers show for the playoffs. And if his body, which has had some issues over the season, gives way a little bit, then you've got Arch Manning right behind it. I mean, two guys who would be top 5 picks in the NFL draft tomorrow. So I just think Texas is going to be too much for Clemson in this game. I'll tell you what, of these 4 opening games, if there was somehow an upset here, notwithstanding, again, their blue blood status, I think this would be a shocker of all shockers if Clemson took Texas down.
Oh.
I don't see it happening.
Massive.
Texas is an 11.5 point favorite. And for all you gamblers out there, lay it on Texas.
By the way, I want to ask a question. I meant to ask this before about Penn State. If Penn State loses this game, does Franklin survive?
Yes.
Yeah, he does.
Ryan Day may not. We'll get there.
Franklin does. He's a really good recruiter. Plus, the news today is that Allar's coming back for next year. He's not entering the NFL draft. And I think if they moved on for Franklin, I don't know what Allar does. So
right. Okay. All right. Yeah, I think Texas is going to steamroll Clemson. Clemson shouldn't even be there. So, Rooster, take us to the Indiana Bowl.
Friday night, 8 o'clock, baby, at Notre Dame Stadium, the battle for Indiana. Two 11-1 teams, however, Notre Dame has beaten four ranked schools, A&M, Louisville, Navy, and Army, and they also beat Georgia Tech that had a big win this year, Stanford, Purdue, and USC. IU has no wins against a ranked team. They're new to this. They are, you know, one of the great stories of this year. They got a first-year coach named Kurt Cignetti, who's doing a hell of a job, and he's got this potent offense rocking and rolling to an 11-1 record his first year behind quarterback Curtis Rourke, who has thrown 27 touchdowns to four interceptions for 2,800 yards. Notre Dame, on the other hand, has Duke transfer Riley Leonard at quarterback, who's a running passing quarterback. He's got 14 rushing touchdowns and 16 passing touchdowns for a total of 30 with five interceptions. But with all that talk of offense, I think this game is going to boil down to Notre Dame's offensive line versus Indiana's defensive line. Notre Dame of late has gotten their act together, but they lost their starting left tackle in the preseason and their starting center in game three. They've started to gel with the people they have now, and they're averaging over 200 yards a game rushing, but they have a true freshman starting at left tackle in the playoffs against Indiana's like monster defensive lineman, a guy named Mikhail Kamara. He leads the team in sacks, tackles for a loss, and forced fumbles. And I think the game is going to come down to that. I mean, Indiana's defensive line is healthy, has been all year, and Notre Dame has been sort of a patchwork offensive line that seems to have pulled their act together, particularly in the last five games. They've scored a lot of points this year. FanDuel has Notre Dame favored by 7.5 points. And I just think because of their experience, their schedule, Indiana's kids coming in to see touchdown Jesus and face all this for the first time, I think Notre Dame's going to win it, but it's not going to be a cakewalk because Indiana's a good team.
Who is Indiana beat this year?
They've beaten Nebraska, which was hot for a little while this year, but it did not finish the season ranked. FIU, they beat Purdue. The only ranked team they played was Ohio State, and they got spanked 38-16.
I mean, I guess what arguably the biggest win of the year was against Michigan, right? By five.
I didn't know they played Michigan this year.
Yeah, they beat them 20-15. Huh. I mean, to me, that's the biggest good win.
That's a pretty good win for Indiana.
Michigan's not ranked. And they did beat Ohio State.
They beat Ohio State.
I don't know. Indiana hasn't shown much yet.
Well, this kid, Rourke, is a real talent. He really is.
No, I mean, they're in there because they had a very light Big Ten schedule.
Yeah. Well, Notre Dame is my sleeper pick in the whole thing here, so I think they're the team that could surprise some people.
Well, let's talk about Notre Dame. So. Who have they beaten?
They beat A&M first game. They beat Louisville, Navy, Army.
Unranked.
No. A&M 20, Louisville 15, Navy 24, Army 14.
Yeah, at the time, I get that. But
they
as
beat
far
Southern
as
Cal.
They beat USC. They beat Georgia Tech after Georgia Tech got a big win this year.
I mean, your schedule is your schedule is, but I just Notre Dame doesn't really have a signature win either. But I do think Notre Dame is going to win, and I don't think it's going to be close.
I think Notre Dame, though, don't they have one of the hardest strength of schedules in the tournament, though? I think they do. I mean, they certainly, you know, those are not small programs that they're beating.
No, but they're not having a big year programs. I mean, USC's had a bad year.
I think Notre Dame in this, I mean, obviously each year is different from the ones before, but Notre Dame has suffered in the past in the BCS that they either had a semifinal or even a final where it was, I think they benefit from this like warm-up situation. It's going to be interesting. I think that if they handle IU, they're going to give Georgia all they can handle. And it will be very, very interesting to see what happens with the Notre Dame team and kind of gets warmed up. And I still like their coach.
Yeah.
Like their coach.
Yeah. They just extended him for 4 years, and he's now one of the highest paid coaches in football. He's making over $9 million
a year. Oof. Back to the money. All right. So we got one more game to talk about then. We're going to circle back to you, Pope, for a little Tennessee, Ohio State. That's a pretty interesting matchup.
Well, I mean, it is your arguably your best matchup because it's the closest ranking teams. Ohio State has a ton of pressure in this game. Just from what you read in social media and what you're seeing, there are season ticket holders who are not going to this game. Tennessee fans are buying them up. It's almost scandalous. It'll be interesting to see what the crowd is like. It's kind of hard to measure what that loss to Michigan did to their psyche. If Ohio State loses, then I think Ryan Day is in big trouble.
Gone.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's a lot of pressure. Tennessee, I don't know. They're not playing with house money, but I mean, there's not a lot of pressure on Tennessee. But look, you know, so you look at Tennessee, their best win of the year was against Alabama, beat them by a touchdown. They beat Florida in overtime, but yeah, they played a pretty easy SEC schedule. They lost to Georgia. They got blown out by Georgia. And they lost to Arkansas, which did not have a good year, very questionable loss. Ohio State, you know, their two signature wins are Penn State and Indiana. And we've talked about both of those programs. I mean, we'll find out if the Big Ten was all about beating each other or were they actually a really good conference. And then they lost to Oregon and the inexcusable loss to Michigan at home. You know, the Tennessee's got the number four defense. Ohio State has the number one defense. So something's got to break. I think a lot of attention is going to be on the freshman quarterback, Nico Lamialeva for UT. Can he rise to the occasion? Is the stage too big for him? If he has a good game, I think that Tennessee can beat Ohio State. I think they're very beatable. What do you guys think? 7.5 point. I think, I don't know, maybe you take Tennessee on that one.
Oh, I think so.
I like Ohio State to bounce back. I don't know what the hell was going on in that Michigan game, but they have a lot of firepower. I just think you're gonna have a very, very angry team. And I can't pronounce the guy's name as well as Pope did, but the kid is still a freshman Tennessee kid. They've been a fun team and they've obviously been sharpened by SEC schedule, but I don't think Ohio State's schedule or their team is any slouch. I don't know about, what'd you say, was 7.5?
Yeah.
I don't know about
that's
7.5.
That's a big line.
I'm surprised it's that big. That's Vegas telling you something. I like Ohio State in this one.
And the over under is 46.5, which is pretty low. And I assume it's going to be Saturday night in Columbus, Ohio. It's going to be butt cold. So
yes,
good luck Tennessee playing in that.
Yes.
Well, these are some fun matchups. They're going to be interesting to watch. I mean, I think these could all be good games. And that's what we've wanted. So let's go see what they can do with it. Anything else on the playoff games this weekend? We got a Heisman Trophy winner. We got two of them playing in the NFL and playing pretty well right now. So, you know, this is this means something. House, what do you think about the Heisman?
Rooster, I know you went to the bar. I just want to say, you're crazy. You're crazy.
It's actually crazy, bro. Actually crazy.
I hope you're just going to stick with Mr. Hunter because I'm going to stick with Mr. Gienti. You guys, like, as they say, Travis Hunter was the media Heisman and Ashton Gentry was the people's Heisman. Have you seen some of these numbers comparatively and how much Gentry got screwed out of this award?
Wow.
Listen to this. He was 131 yards from the all-time FBS rushing record of one Barry Sanders. And by the way, because of how far they were up and they were fine in controlling games, he was benched for eight full quarters. He easily would have had the all-time rushing record in FBS history. Here are some people who have won the Heisman. Okay. 2,219 yards for Derrick Henry. 2,124 yards for Ricky Williams, 1,834 yards for Ron Dayne, 1,740 yards for Reggie Bush, 1,658 yards for Mark Ingram. But yet Genty with his 2,400 or whatever, 2,700 yards, no Heisman.
Did you just bring Ricky Williams up again?
Of course.
Come on. I mean, that's two times more that I've heard his name in the last 15 years in the last 2 days from you, House. Okay, go on.
I know the other was Ricky Waters, but this is...
Right.
You must be smoking some Ricky Williams marijuana. But
yeah, maybe, right, yeah.
Genty, first in rushing yards, first in rushing TDs, first in yards per carry, first in yards after contact, first in forced missed tackles. Travis Hunter is a big... media creation, Rooster.
Oh, come on now.
Sixth in receiving yards.
You're killing your credibility. You made a very credible argument. Now you're starting to kill it.
Second in receiving touchdowns and 17th in interceptions. What's all the hype, man?
You're crazy.
Yeah, but crazy,
Rooster, bro.
Maybe Genty should have struck the pose a little bit.
I'm going to be a little more succinct. Travis Hunter is the best wide receiver in college football and the best cornerback in college football all at the same time. Heisman Trophy, end of discussion. Now, who's going to have the better NFL career? Genty, obviously. He's clearly going to be, you know, for the 5 years that a running back holds up, the better player. But for the Heisman, Travis is the best football player in college football right now.
Listen, don't sleep on Hunter's NFL career. I mean, a lockdown corner who can play 10 years in the NFL is worth more than a running back. Now, Genty may turn out to be, you know, Adrian Peterson and super duper special like that, but you get a lockdown corner, man. That is something.
Yeah, but he's tiny. That's the problem. He's a small dude.
Here's my nightmare scenario is Ashton Genty going to the Dallas Cowgirls. That is my nightmare scenario.
No, Rico Dowdle, 150 yards. They don't need a running back.
I hate to say it, House, but you know where a lot of people have seen him on the mock boards going?
Where?
Washington, actually. I've seen a number of mock boards that have him going to Washington.
What's wrong with B-Rob? What's wrong with B-Rob? You don't like your running back?
Those would be two pretty good backs to have.
House, one of the points that you could have made is that Boise State didn't have a great passing attack this year. And so they were the defenses were stacking the box against him, and he still ran them.
Obviously, I've convinced you.
Yeah, no, I think he's awesome, and in any other year should have gotten the Heisman.
Rooster, I know you're going to take a quarterback and probably be stuck with somebody like Cam Ward, but if the Giants were left with either Genty or Hunter, who would you want for your Giants team?
Genty, because we already have Malik Nabers, but then we'd be all where we started with Saquon all over again.
Yeah, I was going to say
that. High-profile running back, and no offensive line. Shitty defense. I mean, what we need to just smarten up. I think we should trade down, honestly.
And then you could let Genty go to the Eagles.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
We should trade down and
let him be a free agent to somebody.
We should trade down and collect offensive and defensive linemen at this point.
Well, that'll never happen.
Because I think they're going to draft Shedeur Sanders, and who knows what he's going to do. I mean, yeah, it's too much of an unknown.
All right. Well, it was a good argument, fellas. I appreciate that. Let's go to the next coach who could be developing a Heisman candidate. We got to talk about this Belichick thing.
Disgusting.
Why?
This is bananas. There's so much crazy stuff about this that's coming out. So he's got his son is guaranteed to be the next coach after him, right?
I think that was rumored. I don't think that's in the contract.
Okay. Well, what is in the contract?
You can ask Matt Miller, but I don't think that's in the contract.
Is this to do with the rat tail?
Oh, I don't know.
Steven, he's the one who makes the crazy faces.
Yeah.
But am I right, though, that after June 25th, the buyout for his contract goes from $10 million to $1 million? So he could literally take an NFL job after June 25th or something, and it would only be a $1 million buyout? He would never coach a game?
That seems like that's right. It's an interesting – I mean, who negotiated that, and what was their motivation?
I think I figured this all out, Bison.
Okay.
He's guaranteeing his son a head coaching job in college, and he's figuring out how to ditch the girlfriend all in one. She's committed to a post-grad program at UNC that he would also put in his contract. Then he takes a job like maybe in Vegas or something, leaves them both in Chapel Hill, and he's back on the market, baby.
There you go. It doesn't make any sense. He's 14 wins away from the all-time NFL. I mean,
the Jets weren't interested. Nobody wants him.
Well, was it the Jets that he had inquired about? Someone confirmed it was it the Jets he had inquired about before?
Why does nobody want him in the NFL?
Because he wants to be the GM also, and he's a terrible GM.
Pope, how is this guy going, besides the fact of dating them, I'm talking, that's the girls, on the guy's side, how is this guy and his gruff manner and like all his shit, how is he going to relate to these college kids as a coach?
Well, he's not necessarily going to, and he's not necessarily going to have to, because what he's trying to do is he's trying to do a new paradigm. You know, the old paradigm is you got a Mac Brown or a Nick Saban who goes into a parent's house and charms the hell out of them and says, you know, I want your kid to come to my school. I'm going to make him into an NFL, you know, potential, and he'll get a good education and he'll learn things. But the new paradigm is, and I think Deion Sanders kind of started this, because my understanding is he doesn't do the visits. He has other people do it for him. It's come to Chapel Hill, where in addition to getting a great education, we are going to train you for being an NFL prospect. We're going to teach you everything you need to know, and it's almost like a camp. Coach Bill Belichick, the greatest NFL coach of all time, is going to prepare you for the ultimate, which is the NFL, and alongside that, you will, you know, have the opportunity to play for UNC, which is a great school, yada, yada. That is exactly what he's going to do. Now, you know, my wife was laughing. She's like, can you see Bill Belichick, like, glad-handing the alumni and the big boosters with their Southern drawl? Like, oh, coach, it's so nice to meet you, and so thank you for being here in Chapel Hill. And he's just like, I got to go. I mean, It's going to be fascinating to watch.
It's more like the NFL than the NFL is now, though. I mean, there's more free agency in college than there is in the NFL.
Well, look, the proof is you've already seen guys who, like, the number one 2026 quarterback has said, yeah, I'm going to go to Chapel Hill. I want to hear what he has to say. Carolina is, I mean, it's a Hail Mary. Now, in addition to that, though, It's pretty interesting, because Carolina has committed. This is a 5-year, $50 million contract, and they've committed to going from $4 million to $20 million in NIL money. So, I mean, Carolina is all in, and going in, getting Belichick, see how long he lasts. But they've clearly indicated they want to play with the big boys.
Well, it's interesting. This will be. I'm really curious what the line is on him coaching a single game for UNC.
I might
put some money on that.
One of my favorite comments on the Inside Carolina pod I listened to was a guy said, you know, Belichick coming to Chapel Hill is like a black swan riding a unicorn over a rainbow. It's that shocking.
It's Rodney Dangerfield all over
it's
again.
It's crazy.
So. Oh yeah. Triple Indy.
It's crazy, bro. By the way, if you want one other crazy story that you thought would never end up as a head coach in college football, I don't know if you saw the breaking news that Sacramento State is poised to hire one Michael Vick as their head coach.
Oh, my goodness.
Sacramento State is building a new stadium, has $50 million in NIL money. And the recruit for all of that, the next Neon Deion, is going to be Michael Vick, bringing all those guys to Sacramento State. It's almost as crazy as Belichick.
I saw that. Yeah.
That's are they even wild. In a conference?
Probably. They're probably in some West Coast conference.
$50 million for NIL? $50
million in NIL money. Yep.
That's twice the budget of the highest team right now.
It's going to be Michael Vick developing it.
Like Georgia, right. Texas, they're like 25, 26 million NIL.
It's crazy, man.
Let's get to the more financially reasonable of the football leagues, the NFL, where money makes sense, believe it or not. Who's going to start us off on week 15?
I will.
Rooster?
Yeah, the early games were horrible. Unlike weeks 13 and 14, the early games were not fun to watch, but a lot of things became clear. In the last two games, the Detroit Lions have given up 79 points, and the Bills have given up 86 points. The Bills have a terrible defense, and the Lions have a defense decimated by injuries.
Yeah.
And they just lost two more starters last game, which to me, clarifies the team at the top for me is now the Eagles, because the Eagles manhandled the Steelers and their offense is coming together. All this nonsense about AJ Brown just seems to have disappeared.
He got hurt.
They've got a great running game, but they have a defense. That's the difference. They have a defense. And so unless the Chiefs can do a turnaround at the end of the year and Mahomes with his little year end ankle injury suddenly becomes Miracle Man again. I got the Eagles as a favorite and the Packers maybe next in the NFC
after the
Seahawks.
I just need Goff to keep putting up 50 fantasy points a game for two more weeks.
He got through for five touchdowns, right? And they lost the game.
Yeah.
That makes my point right there.
Yeah. Yeah,
works
out for me.
Well, they just lost David Montgomery for the year. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah, but they Gibbs. If you have to play Gibbs the whole game, that's not such a loss.
Well, it's better to have a committee on a running.
Also, like also on my fantasy team.
Yeah,
keep him in the game.
So the Seahawks' dreams are gone thanks to the Packers. The Dolphins are out thanks to the Texans, who crushed them 20-12. The Bucs continue to impress. I mean, House is right about
that. Was an impressive win.
They're way better than people give them credit for.
Yes. And
Christ, Mike Evans should be in the Hall of Fame the second he retires. He's amazing. The Rams stayed alive. You know, last time we talked about this, the Green Bay was going to go to Seattle in the first round of the playoffs. Not now. So the Rams are in maybe, but Seattle is definitely out. Things are becoming clearer and clearer. And unfortunately for the Lions, which were really a spectacular team all year long, I don't think you can win late in the playoffs with no defense. And it's just sad because they had a good defense earlier this year. I think they actually led the league in defensive scoring at one point. Bills never had a decent defense, but the Lions sure did. And it's just kind of sad to see that fall away from them like this. Anyone else have any standout games they wanted to talk about?
I just have a question. How many, just asking for a friend here, how many wins is it going to take to get into the playoffs in the NFC?
10.
10.
You think 10 gets it in? Gets in?
Yep.
Yeah. Because Seattle's not going to win 2 out of 3. They're your next closest. Arizona's not going to win 3 out of 3. You guys just need to win against the Cowboys, right? That'll make you 10 wins.
We just need one more, and we got the Eagles this weekend, and then the Falcons and the Cowboys.
Yeah.
So you can beat the Falcons and the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And then you'll have the privilege of playing the Eagles in the first round.
Yeah. I mean,
because the Eagles are going to bye. The Eagles
only the ones he gets a bye.
You don't
Lions
think the
have the tiebreaker
end up with the ones?
No, so
the
he
Eagles
listen,
aren't gonna end up
is,
with the one. I think Lions are gonna end up with one.
Let me recap this because I've only been staring at it for the last 12 hours or longer, but I guess 20 hours. The Lions, the Vikings, presumably who will beat the Bears tonight, and the Eagles will all be at 12-2. Unfortunately, the Eagles for me, nobody else on this pod, but unfortunately, the Eagles lose a tiebreaker to both of them. The Lions and the Vikings face each other the last week of the season. One of those teams is going to have three losses. So the Eagles would need one of the other of the two to lose a second game. The best situation for the Eagles would be the Lions lose to the 49ers and then beat the Vikings and the Eagles win out. I think the Eagles are going to have their hands full this week in Washington. I just do. I think the Washington is going to get
the week.
I think Washington is going to figure out they need to get their head out of their ass because they've not been playing that great lately. But I think they will. It's revenge, division, home. And I think the Eagles are going to have their hands full. But if they get past that game, look out. I really, you know, then it's the Giants and Cowboys who are just like, we'll take our draft pick.
Win-win.
But right now, I think the Washington story is a very good story. You get rid of your owner. You bring in new ownership. You get some fan interest back in the game. You get a really darling rookie quarterback. And so everything right now is gravy for Washington. I really do. And if I were a Washington fan, I'd be thrilled no matter what happens going forward. That said, I do think they have regressed some. I think they'll be better
since the injury.
Next year. Yeah.
Ever since the injury.
Well, yes. Jalen, I mean, there's a couple issues with Washington. I mean, I think everything you said is right. I never thought they'd have nine wins this season, let alone possibly in playoffs. But Jalen's actually played really well.
Jalen's my guy, but if you want to get on board, there's three for you.
I know. Sorry. Jaden is played really well. I mean, he missed Perry on two touchdown passes yesterday, and Harry McLaurin dropped one that should have been a touchdown. Those were like he completed 80.6% of his passes yesterday. I mean, he is playing really high level. The thing that happened yesterday, and nobody talks about it because it's an offensive lineman, but just before the game, their center, Tyler Biadasz, who's been just fantastic this year, was scratched with an illness. And I mean, he was set to go until getting into the locker room Sunday morning and getting scratched. That they couldn't run the ball at all yesterday. So that's a big problem. Look, the Eagles are, I've been saying it for a while. The Eagles are a better team than Washington. You know, it's a division game. It will be a lot of emotion around it. You know, I think the Eagles will win, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's close or if Washington pulls it out just because, you know, two division NFC East teams playing. It'll be tight. It'll be a fight. But the Eagles are a Super Bowl favorite right now. And Washington is not.
They are.
I want to say this about the Eagles because I feel like it's a jinx and everything when I talk about them, even though how much I love to say how amazing they are. But what Vic Fangio has done to that defense is unbelievable. I think Jalen Carter is going to be the defensive player of the year. He's that dominant. He is getting to the point, you can see it on every play, he's getting to the point of J.J. Watt, Aaron Donald dominant. It takes two or three people to hold him, to prevent him from getting in the backfield, getting the quarterback. He takes up at least two guys on the offensive line. Quinyon Mitchell is a rookie and no quarterback will throw to his side. That is crazy. He's not let up a touchdown this year, and he's just, that defense and Zach Bond, who nobody even heard of, is really, he's probably ahead of Warner as the best linebacker in football right now. They're tackling better. Their defense is winning them games. And if it's true that defense wins championships, look out for the Birds. That said, nobody wants to play the Bucs or the Packers in the playoffs. Those teams are dangerous. Jordan Love is really good. I don't know how much you watched of that game last night, but some of those balls he put into Christian Watson's hands were re-damn-diculous.
And this is the same thing he did last year. He was mediocre early in the season, and then the end of the season, all of a sudden, he's hot as can be. And like I said about the Eagles, the Packers have a good defense.
So I think if the Bills can't figure out how to play defense and the Chiefs can't get healthy and turn back the clock a few years for some of their players, I like the NFC's chances this year, but I guess you have to say all roads run through the defending champion, and the Chiefs are where it's at. But guess what, guys? There's a real good chance that the Chiefs get an upgraded quarterback this week. Carson Wentz is coming in, baby.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
That would explain our Plaxicos in a minute.
Hey, House, one thing to also watch for in our game this weekend is we actually have a real cornerback on the field this time.
Is he suiting up? Is
Lattimore he played yesterday, and he wasn't targeted one time in the game. So
that's a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's the first time that I can remember where we've had somebody who can actually cover A.J. Brown.
So the game I'm circling in the AFC playoffs round one is Broncos at Steelers. That should be really interesting, at least from Russell Wilson's perspective.
You guys, Russell Wilson sucks.
He's terrible.
No, he sucks. He cannot hit the side of a barn. He sucks. I have no idea how he's starting. How bad does Justin Fields have to be that he can't get on the field?
At least in the red zone, Justin Fields should be their starter.
I don't know why. I cannot get into the Broncos. I don't know. They do nothing for me as a team. But they're 9-5. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but not interesting. They're just not interesting.
No, but the Sean Payton versus Russell Wilson story is interesting.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good story. All right. Anything else on week 15 before we look at our Plaxicos?
Nope.
Rooster, take us through the Plaxicos.
All right. I'm going to have to pull out my glasses for this. I wrote in chicken scratch. So the leaderboard is in jeopardy of changing depending on the outcome of tonight's game.
Wow.
Milk was 9-4-1. And he picked the Panthers -1.5 over Dallas. And of course, Dallas smoked the Panthers. So Milk is now 9-5-1. I am currently 9-5, and I've got Minnesota -6.5 over the Bears. So if I win, I go back to first place. House, you were tied for third place with Pope, and now you are the sole occupant of third place because you picked the Broncos -3.5 over the Colts and won that game. You are now 9-6. Pope picked the Seahawks +3 over Green Bay, which lost by what, like 17 points?
17.
So Pope, you're 8-7. You're in fourth place. Bison was the other win. So House and Bison won. Milk Pope lost. Bison had Baltimore versus New York -14.5. Is that what it was? Turned out to be you could have added another 5 and you still would have won that. Bison's up to 6-9. Bison picks first, then Pope, then House, and then I guess I'll pick next since Milk technically has a better record.
All right. I got to look at this here. Gosh. I'm going to go with another big spread, and I'm going to take the Bills, giving the Pats 13.5.
All right.
Did you say Pope is next?
Yeah.
Pope is next.
So this is one of the more shocking lines, and I know it's being driven by injury concerns, but Houston's favored by 2.5 points. They're giving 2.5 at Kansas City Arrowhead on Saturday night.
That cray. That is -2.
Whatever. I got
-2. I've got -2 also.
Fine, too. It doesn't matter. I'm still taking the Chiefs. Mahomes is going to show. He'll play. They'll win. They always do.
There are a lot of confusing lines this week. I don't understand a number of them. But that said, I'm really impressed by the Bucks. They're getting scary good too fast. And well, of course, Dallas sucks. So I'm going to take the Bucks -4 against the Sucks. Bucks -4 at Dallas, 8:20 on Sunday Night Football.
I think the Bucks might have a comeback to earth game. I see a Dallas win there.
All right.
They're rolling with Cooper.
There's still no line on the Monday night game, Saints Packers. Did anyone see that one?
Mm-mm, I had no line.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go Rams minus 3.5 at Jets.
That's a good one. That's a good pick.
Rams are another hot team you don't really want to really want to get any of.
Anybody know Milk's pick?
No. We'll have to get that.
We'll fill that in.
We'll get that in. So, all right. Anything all else right. on NFL?
That's it.
Hey, guys. Who's got a punch? Don't call it a comeback.
I have, once I find this guy's name, here it is. Who was it that we were talking about in a game a few weeks ago? Oh, it was Anthony, the coach of the quarterback of the Colts, Richardson.
Yeah.
We just decided to take off a play. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Took himself out of the game.
Oh okay, yeah. This is a good one.
This is the 49ers guy.
Oh, yeah. Come on, Devondre Campbell. What are you out of your mind? Are you out of your mind that you're playing for a game that you love, that so many players would like to be on the field, and you're playing for the 49ers, this incredible team and a great coach, and you just decide that you're just not going to play? You're just absolutely brutal. Not going to play? Well, you might enjoy my punch, because that's going to be a lot lighter on you than the suspension of the final three games of the season and the $800,000 that comes with that suspension that you don't get paid because you were a little baby.
So that they could have released them and they would have had to pay them, but if they, by suspending them, they don't have to pay them. Is that how that worked?
Yep.
There's probably going to be a NFLPA grievance filed there, right?
Yeah, too bad.
I know, right?
If they cut him, their thought was if they cut him, he gets rewarded by signing somewhere else because it's a team suspension. You know, he signs tomorrow with whomever, the Commanders, and then he gets his money.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've got one too. In the Colts Broncos game this past week, it was a must win game for the Colts to stay alive in the playoff race. I don't think their chances were great, but they were still alive mathematically. And at one point, Jonathan Taylor, the running back for the Colts, breaks off a really impressive 41-yard touchdown run that would have put the Colts up 19-7 over the Broncos, except he pulls this thing that drives me effing crazy that people do, starts dancing and prancing before he actually gets to the end zone and drops the effing ball.
Oh God.
Inches shy of the goal line.
How do these guys do this?
I mean,
how does this happen?
Secure the ball with both hands, run it to the back of the end zone and hand it to the referee, for Christ's sake. You're a professional. You know, you're getting paid gazillions of dollars after a holdout to get this right. Don't do that. You should never do that. Ever.
Get off my lawn.
Level. Fucking guy, punch! I'm gonna punch him
off my lawn
in the nuts.
Any other punches, nuts or otherwise? No. All right, who's got a last up?
Barbecue sauce.
I just have a quick one. I guess it's maybe a golf clap, but it's still a good story. I don't know if you guys saw this good story about Teddy Bridgewater. Speaking about guys turning coaches.
Oh, I did. Yes.
That's a good one. I like Teddy Bridgewater. He never really amounted to what he probably was his potential in the NFL. And I like when these guys leave and decide to, you know, give back to younger kids. And he went to Miami Northwestern High School. And this past weekend, in his very first year as a head coach at the top level of Florida sports, Miami Northwestern beat Raines High School 41-0 to win the state championship, 41-0 in a championship game. I love it when these NFL guys, like these kids must have been eyes wide open. Good for Teddy Bridgewater, a true Ted Lasso moment. The coach comes
in.
And
good one. Coach Lasso. Good one.
Coach Lasso.
All right.
Eddie Lasso.
Buzzer beaters. Somebody got one?
I got a couple of small ones.
Yeah, you go first. I have a couple of small ones.
One of my favorite players in the NFL is Nick Chubb. I just love that guy. And the poor guy, after fighting back from a devastating knee injury, broke his foot last weekend. It's just a shame. So I just want to hope he gets well and gets back next year and has a full season of full health. And then I also just wanted to throw this out there because I know you guys were concerned. UConn Hoops is back, baby, with an impressive win over Gonzaga, which was ranked 8th in the country. Just so you can all sleep better tonight.
Hurley didn't blow his top.
Nope. UConn's back. We're all good.
Well, let me say, while Rooster is crowing about one of his teams, he's got another one of his teams that he ain't getting paid on this year. Man Shitty is in a toilet bowl.
They sure are.
I mean, I realize that this is a world sport and not so much a USA sport, but it keeps bringing up Pep Guardiola and what he has done and how many championships he's won. This would be like Belichick. I don't even know what the comp is, but this is a guy who is one of the best soccer coaches of all time who cannot win a soccer game right now with an incredibly talented team. And this weekend in the classic big rivalry matchup, the Manchester Derby between Man City and Man U, they were up 1-0 in the 86th minute.
I turned it off. I thought the game was over.
It was, but you got to play all 90. And then Amad Diallo had an incredible assist that came to the box for was tackled in the box, and then that led to a PK for Bruno Fernandes, and then another incredible goal right after that by Man U. That was a shocking 2-1 win, and Man City is in tatters right now, and I am not shedding any tears. Also,
fans were booing at Etihad
Stadium. Great. It's crazy, man. You guys, I don't know if you heard this rumor, but apparently Brock Purdy is about to get paid.
Yep.
And the numbers are re-damn-diculous. Like, come on. Sorry, I think I'm the only one on here that thinks he sucks, but this guy, he's making $985,000 right now, which is about how much he should be making. They're talking right now about a $290 million 5-year contract, $58 million a year for Mr. Irrelevant.
That's crazy, bro.
That's crazy, bro.
Come on.
As Bison says, he's just a guy.
He is.
You can't pay Brock Purdy that. You can't pay Brock Purdy that.
Oh,
unreal.
All right, I got a couple.
Let's go.
Tomorrow night, in case you guys are bored and want something to watch on TV, we got two fun events. We got the new showdown match of Liv versus PGA Tour.
Bryson and Brooks
versus Scotty and Rory at Shadow Creek. Yeah, and that's tomorrow at 6:00 Eastern on TNT, which rolls right into the NBA Cup Final, the Bucks and Giannis versus OKC tomorrow night at 8:30 tip in Vegas.
That's a good game. That's a good game.
Cup winner. Let's see SGA action.
Speaking of NBA house, are the 76ers officially jinxed?
Cursed.
Oh, my God.
McLean.
Embiid has a broken nose, and McCain is out for indefinitely, I guess.
Probably for the year. I don't know. I mean, you have to protect that asset. I mean, the guy was going to be Rookie of the Year, no question. He tore his MCL. It's terrible.
Yeah. All right, I got two quick buzzers. Hockey, the Washington Capitals, 9-0-1 in their last 10, and just on fire. 21-6-2, best record in the NHL, are playing at the Dallas Stars tonight. You can't win every road game, so I think that streak comes to an end tonight. And then one last buzzer, Georgetown Hoyas, 75, Syracuse Losers, 71. Always good when Georgetown beats Syracuse. Guys, have a good week.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay, and he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.